hand, that Lord who is normally blessing the devotees, now he has taken a stick to discipline the horses. Totra Vetraika Pranaya, he is the chariot of Arjuna. Totra Vetraika Pranaya, Jnana Mudraya Krishnaya. That Lord Krishna now raising his hand, Jnana Mudra, when he speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Gita Amrita Duhe Namaha. He is giving the nectar of the Bhagavad Gita. So, we will discuss one section of the Bhagavad Gita, which our Acharyas have defined to be very important. We'll take the 15th chapter. 15th chapter has 4 sections. So, we'll discuss the 3rd and the 4th sections. So, among the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, 18 chapters, the last chapter, 18th, is the longest with 78 verses. And second chapter, the second longest, is 72 verses. And the 12th and the 15th chapters are the shortest, with 20 verses each. So the 15th chapter is called as Purushottam Yoga. So today morning I was speaking about the upside down reflection. Upside down tree reflection. That is in the 15th chapter itself. So the first section, verses 1 to 5, talks about this upside down tree. The second section talks about, from verses 6 to 11, it talks about how the soul is entangled in the material world and how he can, by the eyes of knowledge, come out of this material world. Pashyanti jnana chakshushaha, with the eyes of knowledge. So, after describing how the soul can become disentangled from this material world and return to the spiritual world, then we will discuss from 15.12 onwards. Arjuna has a question. Actually, understanding the spiritual world, detaching oneself from the body, these are quite advanced spiritual concepts. So how can one begin one's God consciousness? So there, Lord Krishna says that you can understand God as the maintainer even in the material world. So that is what this section talks about. So we'll recite 15 point. We'll recite each of the verses, we'll discuss them a little bit, and then we'll go to the next verse. So 15.12.
Yadadityagatam
tejo
jagadbhasayate akhilam yachandramasi yachagnau tattejo
vidhimamakam.
So, who would like to read the translation?
The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this cold world, comes from me. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of the fire are also come from me.
Yes. So, in this world, for us to see anything, we need light. The world is inherently dark. And whatever are the sources of light, they all come from the Supreme Lord. So, in that sense, without illumination, we cannot do anything. Yesterday there was a little power cut for some time. Very well. We become helpless, practically speaking. So, the source of illumination is Krishna. Now, this verse is significant because just a few verses earlier, in 15.6, Lord Krishna told how these three sources of illumination are not there in the spiritual world. Nakad bhasayate suryo, na shashanko na pavakaha. So, the same thing, what is Krishna saying? The fire, moon and sun. So, in the spiritual world, is the sun, moon, fire there? Yes, they are there. But there is no dependence on them for illumination. In the material, in the spiritual world also, there is day, time, midday, evening, night, and Krishna performs different pastimes. But time is not the controller. Krishna is the controller. And if Krishna wants, Krishna can expand the time. So, when Krishna is saying that, in that place, there is no darkness. That is what is indicated by that verse. That there is everything is self-luminous. And these are there just to enhance the pastimes. So, you know, Krishna cannot perform his rasa when the sun is shining brightly in the sky. So, for that, there is the moon. And then, apparently, Sharad Purnima is there. So, like that, everything that is there in the material world, to some extent, is there in the spiritual world. But that is only there to enhance the pastimes. So in the material world, time is present as the controller and the destroyer. So in the spiritual world, time is present, but it is not the controller, not the destroyer. It just exists for the purpose of creating dynamism and variety. in the pastimes of Krishna. However, in the material world, which is dark, we need sources of illumination. And Krishna is telling that I am the source of light. Now this is, can be understood at various levels. At one level we understand that Krishna has actually designed the sun, the moon. You know, God is a designer, as we study in Discover Yourself 1. And we can understand God's super intelligence by this. That is only one level of understanding it. Another level of understanding it is that actually God is present. You know, in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where prayers are offered to Suryadev, Chakravarti Pad in the purport describes, that actually on the sun planet, there is Surya Narayana. There is a form of Lord Vishnu who is present. And Surya is a devotee. And he worships Surya Narayana over there. That's why when as devotees we chant the Brahma Gayatri Mantra after Brahman Diksha. Now, externally speaking, people think that Savitra, that's one of the words. Savitra is the name of Suryadev. So that is the understanding. But actually, when we are meditating on the sun god, we are not meditating on sun god per se. We are meditating on the son of the sun god. That means the person who empowers the sun god. So Surya Narayan is a form of Lord Vishnu who resides on the sun planet, and he gives the power to Suryadev to illuminate the world. So in that sense, God is not just the creator of the sun, but he is also present in the sun planet personally as one of his expansions. So in the Bhagavad Gita, a very important theme is the relationship of God with the material world. Now, traditionally, in the Western philosophy, as well as in Indian philosophy, there are two schools of thought. One is says that God is transcendent, and the other says God is immanent. Transcendent means God is beyond this world. God is beyond this world. God has no connection with this world. He's so pure. No, many of you may be surprised to know that according to Islam, God is not omnipresent. God is omnipotent, but he's not omnipresent. Why? Because that's why they don't accept the deities. Because their idea is that matter is so sinful, so contaminated, that how can the all pure God come in touch with matter? No, it will be sacrilegious to the all pure nature of God to be in contact with this sinful, contaminated matter. So their idea is the only contact between matter and God was the revelation of the Quran. That's their idea. Now, of course, that is not exactly based on the Quran, and there are verses which indicate alternative things also, but this is the mainstream understanding of Islam today. So, they say this is a very incomplete understanding. It's an extreme other side. That, you know, God is only transcendent. Yes, God is surely transcendent, but God is not only transcendent. That means beyond this world. We see this in the Bhagavad Gita also. Parastasmat bhavonyu. Yes, beyond this world is another world. That is my abode. Krishna also says that I stay beyond this material world. My form is not material. So God is surely transcendental. But, so the Semitic religions means Judaism, Christianity and Islam, they have focused more on the transcendence of God. And there is a historical reason for that also. Actually, in the Middle East, where Nazareth and other places, Jesus spoke his gospel. At that time, he basically spoke moral codes. There is not much philosophy. So, in the 2nd century, there was a great Christian scholar and theologian, St. Augustine. So, he synthesized the biblical gospel with the Greek philosophy. So, the Greeks, actually, Socrates, Pythagoras, you know, it's interesting to know that Pythagoras, Plotinus, Ptolemy, all of them were brahmacharis. Because, you know, the expatriate culture from India went to the West, and if you look at the thoughts of Plato, you know, actually Socrates was a thinker, but Socrates did not write anything. So, Plato wrote many of the books in which Socrates is giving instruction to his students. So, for example, Phaedrus and other places. The teaching that he is giving is identical to the Bhagavad Gita, practically speaking. So in Phaedrus, you know, one of Socrates' friends is very much lamenting because a relative has passed away. And then Socrates gives his famous reasons about how The soul is eternal and the soul does not die. That's exactly similar to the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So, the point here is that the Greeks, they were originally expatriates. Expatriate means those who left India, and the Vedic culture was spread everywhere. But then, because the connection with the parampara and the main branch of the tree was not there, so gradually a lot of misconceptions and contamination started coming in. So, the Christians took the Greek philosophy to some extent, but they did not take the Greek theology. See, philosophy means understanding of the whole world as such. Theology is especially the understanding of God. So, the Greeks used to worship various kinds of gods, you know, fire god, sun god, moon god. And because the Christians wanted to distinguish their philosophy, they said, all this is nonsense, fire god, sun god, this is all mythology. You know, the God is only transcendental, beyond this world. And that is the God we should worship. So, because of that, historically, Christianity has emphasized excessively on the transcendence of God. And that's why in Christianity, again, nature is not considered sacred. Yeah, that's why they don't consider meat eating to be wrong. Why? Because they don't consider, they have a very strange idea that animals, you ask them how animals are conscious. You know, you tell them, oh, animals, they don't have a soul. That is their idea. In fact, till about 100 years ago, they had an idea that even women don't have souls. It is very strange. Not all sects of Christianity, but major sects of Christianity. So, they have the idea that animals have something called spirit, but not soul. So, a spirit gives them life, but a soul gives consciousness. So, Prabhupada makes things very clear. Spirit, soul.
It is actually very ambiguity for people to get confused. So, spirit soul is one thing. Okay.
So, that the point is that the philosophy is very hazy. And that's why exploiting nature is natural in the Judeo-Christian theology. But anyway, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita talks about God's eminence also. So we see this in several places. In the 7th chapter, Krishna describes how he is the essence of everything. The verses 8 to 10, 8 to 11 talk about Rasoha Mupsukauteya Prabhashmi Shashi Suryayo. How he is the essence of everything. Then, in the 10th chapter, he talks about how he is the best of everything. That is Vibhuti Yoga. Now, this is not to be taken simplistically. When Krishna is telling Arjuna, Pandava Namaham Dhananjaya. So actually, Vishwachakrita describes that Arjuna is thinking, Pandava Nam, he is going to surely speak Yudhishthira, because Yudhishthira is Dharmaraj. So it's very surprised. Pandava Namaham Dhananjaya. So now, when he says, oh Krishna, then he doesn't say, no need to speak Bhagavad Gita, we two are one now.
He doesn't think like that, we two are one.
No, he understands that he's talking about Vibhuti. Means in all categories, whatever is the best, that best is because of Krishna. Now of course, in that same chapter, Krishna has also said, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu. That means, he's the source of everything. He's the source of everything. So you know, the biblical, the Quranic understanding is a little superficial. Their idea, if his God is all pervading, then God will even have to be present in stool. That will contaminate God. But so the idea of, they talk about the transcendence of God, but the transcendence is not very clear. So, you know our Akif Manaf is Airavat Prabhu. So, when he was a student, you know, he was in the Middle East at that time. He was in an Islamic country, so at that time, they had this compulsory Quran classes. So, he was an intellectual, skeptical intellectual. So at that time, the mullah said, you know, he asked the mullah, if God is present everywhere, is he present in soul? And what happened? The mullah got so angry, he said, Shaitan ki baate kar rahe ho. That is it. If you ask any question which they can't answer, that is the standard answer. That is the standard answer there. You know, the devil is speaking through you to contaminate people. So, you know, so he got very angry. He just left that. Then later on, when he went to the West for education, and it became typically materialistic, and he was drinking, and he had gone for a party. They had drunk a lot, and you know, he was become a little too wild. Other people in the party took him and put him in the sort of cellar, the go-down of the hotel, so that he would not disturb. And he was unconscious. He came back to consciousness, wondering, what is all this? Where is he? And there in the long distance, he saw just one beam of light. And the beam of light was falling on some very shining looking object. And then he looked, it was a book. And he went there, and he looked at the book, and he was still a little drunk. God is everywhere, even in stool.
So that was a Back to God in a magazine. And from there, he
was amazed. He read the whole thing. He found it very convincing. And then he went and went to the nearest temple, and he became a devotee. So now he is Airavat Prabhu. He is one of his foremost scholars on Krishna consciousness in Islam. He has written several books, The Hidden Treasure of Al Quran, Quran and Bhakti Yoga. So he talks about how the essential teachings of the Quran is Bhakti. Of course, the hardline, the fanatical Muslims will not accept it. According to fanatical Islam, if anybody leaves Islam, the punishment for leaving Islam is death. So, some mullahs in some countries have put a fatwa on him. So that's why now he has to keep going around. So of course he's a very wonderful Vaishnava and he's preaching very nicely. But the point is that the immanence of God is talked about by Krishna, and it's not simplistic. As Krishna, we know that God is the source of everything. But when we say God is the source of everything, everything does not necessarily remind us of Krishna. Everything doesn't necessarily even attract us. So, whatever attracts us in this world, the source of that attractiveness is Krishna. That is what is talked about by Krishna in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that is Vibhuti Yoga. And this 15th chapter talks about immanence in a different way. So, we talk about three ways of immanence: the essence, the best, and also the source of everything. But here, Krishna is talking about his immanence in the terms of being the maintainer of everything. So, he talks about how he is the maintainer. Is for us to be maintained, light is required. And Krishna is the provider of the light. And then in the next verse he describes about how he is the maintainer not only of the source of light, but the source of the order in the universe. So I'll recite, we don't have so much time, so I'll recite the verse. One of you can read the translation, then we'll go ahead. Gama vishya bhutani dharayami ahamojasa pushnami chaushadhi sarva somo bhutva rasatmakaha. Who would like to read? 15:13.
I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables.
Yes. So, Krishna is telling two things over here. First is that he is actually maintaining the planets in their orbits. Now, modern science may tell us that actually it is gravity which is maintaining the planets in the orbits. But in the philosophy of science, there is a very fundamental problem which scientists have not answered. What is that? Does science explain phenomena or does science merely describe phenomena? Now what is the difference between explaining and describing? You see, if we ask gravity, what is the definition of gravity? Gravity is the force that by which objects are attracted to each other. Or from a cosmic point of view, you can say gravity is the force by which planets stay in their orbits around the sun. Then you ask, what is the cause of planets staying in the orbits around the sun? That is gravity. So what is the explanation there, isn't it? So basically, what philosophers of science have pointed out is that science only observes phenomena and gives a name to phenomena. It doesn't explain the phenomena. In the planets were attracted, were going around in orbits, even before Newton gave the force the name gravity. So what is actually explained? Since Newton's time, Newton himself admitted, I'm not going to talk about the cause or the source of gravity. All that I'm saying is that I'm giving a mathematical formulation for empirically observed phenomena. So some scientists propose particles called gravitons, which cause the attraction. But then they found there are no such particles like that. Then Einstein tried to play things around and he said that actually gravity is a property of space-time. But that theory also has its problems. So the point is that science just observes certain things and gives a name to those things. That is not explaining the cause. It is just giving a name to a pre-existing phenomena. So the cause of the order and the harmony in the universe is actually God's plan and God's presence. In the Rig Veda, this is called as Rita. Rita means Rita. Rita is the order in the world, and God is the maintainer of the order of the world. So in that sense, the Vedic understanding is not inconsistent. The Vedic understanding is a higher understanding. Modern science talks only up to the physical causes, but we go beyond the physical causes to the ultimate cause. So Srila Prabhupada in one lecture says that if you inquire backwards and inquire only up to a particular point, then that is not science. You have to go back to the final point, and where you stop and the last point, that is complete inquiry. So science focuses mostly on trying to find material causes for material phenomena. Material causes are fine, but they are incomplete, very incomplete. Why? A simple example, that science is like a map, and a map is useful for navigating the territory. But suppose from here you want to go to Delhi, Radha Parsarathi Mandir, and then you go there, you take a map, okay, you go along this highway, then you go this way, you go that way, and then you come to Radha Parsarathi and you see, meet some wonderful devotee over there. And then you look in the map, you see, my map doesn't show you, therefore you don't exist. It's ridiculous, isn't it? See, the map is not equivalent to the territory. And what is superior? The territory, not the map. So like that, science is a map. Now in a map, certain features of the territory will be depicted. But no map can depict all the features of the territory. So like that, science focuses on material, measurable aspects of nature. So, two things. Material, measurable aspects of nature. So, science doesn't focus on anything spiritual, and science doesn't focus on anything non-measurable. For example, if we have a gulab jamun, the gulab jamun is material. Now, science can measure the weight, the viscous density, the volume of the gulab jamun. But is there any meter to measure the taste of the gulab jamun? That is one problem in this, confectionery industry. Confectionery is cooking industry. You know, when you make material products, the quality testing, if you make a car, if you make a mobile or something, the quality testing depends on measurable parameters. See, gulab jamun, you cannot have a machine to do the quality testing. Why? Because the taste is a material parameter. But science doesn't talk about. Science doesn't talk about non-measurable material parameters also. Leave alone spiritual parameters. So science is a map which is useful, but it is incomplete. And we have to be aware of its incompleteness and the need for other understandings to get a more complete understanding of reality. So spirituality and science are not at all contradictory. Once we understand what science is offering us and contextualize it properly, science is a map, a remarkably useful map in some extents, but it is a map. But the mistake occurs when we start mistaking the map to be the territory. We start thinking that science is the reality. For example, scientists, they try to make a map of the whole body. And okay, this organ is here, these cells are here. Now, they are very precise in that. But they can't find consciousness anywhere in the body. So they try to say there is no consciousness only. Which is absurd. So Krishna is here indicating the ultimate cause. Yes, there might be some force called gravity, because of which the order is there apparently, but what is the ultimate source of that gravity? And the second thing Krishna says is, Pushnami cha aushadhi sarva, somo bhutva rasatmakaha. So, Pushna, he says, I nourish the vegetables by being the moon. Now, till recently, scientists used to scorn this sort of understanding. This is primitive mythological understanding. You know, what has got the moon got to do with nourishment? Their idea was that only sun has got to do with nourishment. Sun is photosynthesis. But now scientists have found that actually there is something in plants called as the Krebs cycle. This Krebs cycle, what happens is, when there is the moon, when the full moon is there, then the full moon causes the tides to rise. We know that very well. Because the gravity pull causes that. But what scientists don't know, or really said they didn't know, now pioneering scientists are discovering, is that when the tides of the moon, they cause not only the water in the water bodies to rise, but the phases of the moon, not the tides of the moon, the phases of the moon also stimulate osmosis. You know, because when the gravity pull is more, Osmosis is the process by which water in the plants rises upwards. That is stimulated. So according to the phases of the moon, what happens is that the water rises faster, higher. And when water rises faster, higher, then the plants are nourished more. And this they found out especially when they started using greenhouse effect. When they started using the greenhouses, where they cut off the external atmosphere, create an artificial atmosphere. Then they found that the artificial plants don't grow the way similarly as natural plants grow. So what Krishna is telling is actually a profound science. And if something is not understandable to us, the arrogant attitude is to say this is mythology. The humble attitude is to say that we don't understand it right now. So now Krishna is talking at three levels. First level is, he is saying, I maintain the world. I maintain the sun and light, which is sun and other sources of light. And I maintain the earth in its place by which you can live. Then third level is saying, after there is a light for you to see, there is an earth to live, then you need food to eat. So I provide you the food also. Now, the next verse will tell, I not only provide you the food to eat, I also digest the food for you. Aham vaishvanaro bhutva praninam deham ashritah pranapana samayuktah pachamyannam chaturvidham.
I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of pachita.
Yeah. So, praninam deham ashritah. So, actually, all living entities are meant to be Krishna ashritah. But they live the ashray of Krishna and they think that we will enjoy in this world. And how will we enjoy? We need the body to enjoy. So, they actually take shelter of the body. And that's why materialistic people, especially when they fall sick, they get terribly frustrated. Why? Because they can't enjoy. As devotees, we may also get frustrated when we fall sick. But still our service can go on. We can remember Krishna, chant here. But materialistic people, they are completely dependent on the body for their enjoyment. That they take a shelter of the body. But it is a durashraya, it is not a good ashraya. But even when somebody takes shelter of the body, Krishna is telling that you have taken shelter of the body, but I am the shelter of the body ultimately. The body is being maintained by me. You are deha ashrita, but the deha is dependent on me. How is it? So, the body depends on primarily digestion. You know, scientists talk about respiration. It's important. But there are various systems. The energy for the body comes from digestion. So there are two sources of energy. Just like in a car, the fuel for the car is required. At the same time, the driver also is required. So like that, the sources of energy are twofold. One is the soul, which is like the activator or animator of the body. But at the same time, the food is like the physical energy for the body. So somebody may say, just food alone is enough. No. If you feed a dead person food, nothing happens to him. So, just like you put a fuel in a car, in which there is no driver, nothing happens. So, the fuel has to be converted into kinetic energy in the car. Like that, the food that we eat has to be converted. And it's a very complicated process. Our researchers have been trying for many years now, that if we can create, like they have dialysis, if somebody can't pass out, their kidneys are not working, then they have dialysis unit. If your heart is not working properly, they have pacemakers. So they thought, can we have an artificial digestive machine? People's digestion is not working properly, we can try to have an artificial digestive machine. But then they found that the process of digestion is so complicated, with so many processes involved in it, that they realized that a machine will not be sufficient. You will need a factory. And not just a factory, a chain of factory that will extend over 2 miles. So, with nanotechnology, the miles might be a little lesser, but still it is long, very, very long. But the point is that it's not simple. And scientists have, as of now, completely abandoned the idea of trying to create an artificial substitute for digestion. You can't do anything. It's a very complicated process. So, who is doing that food? Doing that digestion? It is Krishna. Actually, it is said that God gives and forgives. We get and forget. You know, Krishna is doing so much for digesting our food. The only time we remember our digestion is when it doesn't digest. So, but Krishna is actually doing everything for us. So, and how does he digest? There are two, two factors over here, neither of which are recognized by allopathy. Allopathy has a very gross understanding of things. And okay, there are certain organs and there are certain fluids and which are flowing, and that's what causes digestion. So what causes digestion? Certain enzymes are secreted in the stomach which cause digestion, which is fine, which is a partial understanding, but there are subtler principles over there. You know, Jathara Agni, the fire of digestion. Now, this fire is not similar to the gross fire that we have. That fire causes burning. But this fire doesn't burn, but this fire produces heat. And heat is a cause of transformation, cause of metabolism in the body. And it is prana and apan. So, how the food is digested is, the fire is there, and just like, you know, when you stir, if you are making khichdi, below you need heat, but along with that you also have to shake it. Otherwise just the lower part will get burned and upper part will stay uncooked. So like that, prana apana samayuktaha. So prana and apana are airs in the body. The airs in the body move up and down, and that's what causes digestion. So Ayurveda describes this quite systematically. Ayurveda is a upanga of the Atharva Veda, and that describes this. So now, Krishna till now has talked about how he is the maintainer of all living entities materially. And Krishna said that this is the beginning of Jnana Chakshu. The word Jnana Chakshu came in 15.10. How can we begin our God consciousness? By understanding that God is our maintainer even materially. But God's purpose is not just to maintain us materially. Because materially ultimately everybody is going to die. So God is our maintainer in one more important way. And that is described in the next verse, which is very often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. So we'll recite it together. Sarvasya chaham hrudi sannivishto mattah srutir jnanam apohanam cha vedaischa sarvairahameva vedyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham.
I have repeated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta and I am the knower of the Vedas.
Yes. So, here Krishna is talking about the most important aspect of his immanence. See, you know, there is Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, Brahman is all-pervading, Paramatma is immanent and Bhagavan is transcendent. So, the Vedic understanding is very sophisticated. Yes, tripartite level of the absolute truth. So, here he is talking about the Paramatma aspect. He is present in the hearts of everyone. And what is he doing over there? He is not sleeping. In fact, we are sleeping. Chakshuryasya Vishyati is described. And when every... Yena Chetayate Vishvam Vishvam Chetanyate Nayam. So, Swayambhuva Bhanu in the 8th chapter, 8th canto, 1st chapter of the Bhagavatam describes how he is the source of consciousness for everyone. But it is not that everything else gives consciousness to him. So, Chakshuryasya Vishyati. His eyes also don't blink. He's so alert. What is he doing in the heart? He's staying in the heart and... Mattaha smutir jnanam apohanacha. He gives knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. Now, this is at various levels. At one level is, when we go from one body to the next body, at that time Krishna gives us knowledge of what to do in that next body. And he gives us forgetfulness of the previous body so that we can go ahead in our lives. In fact, whatever is talked about by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, is talked about by Krishna to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita. The Uddhava Gita is very long. In fact, when Arjuna asks a question, Uddhava asks a question to Krishna. So Krishna tells, Arjuna had asked the same question to me earlier.
So, speaking the same thing, he says, now I'll speak in detail to you, because there in the battlefield I couldn't speak so much. So, it goes over a lot of almost like, out of 31 chapters are there in the 11th canto. It's almost like 20 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita.
So one of Srila Prabhupada's colleagues is Satyaraj Prabhu. You know, he wrote the first book called Krishna's Song. It is Bhagavad Gita. So now he's written a book called Krishna's Other Song.
So
he's explained the Uddhava Gita very nicely over there. So the same principles are illustrated over there in the Uddhava Gita. So there Krishna describes how this, what is actually death? He says, forgetfulness of one's past identity is called as death. And identification with one's new identity is called as birth. So, how does that happen? That happens by the Super Soul's grace. The Super Soul gives us whatever is required for two purposes. The material world has two purposes. It is experimentation and reformation. Experimentation means the soul wants to experiment with various ways of enjoying in this world. And Krishna allows in that facility. Experiment. Whatever you want to do, you can try that. And after, so that's why do we forget our past lives? Because this life is an opportunity to enjoy in a new way. So that's why experimentation. Whatever we want, we are given the facility to enjoy. Now, as scientists have studied more and more, they have found how amazing is the instinct within animals, birds and animals. See, the design argument within physics and chemistry was always there, in the sense that the structures of matter. But now, what is happening is the design argument within biology is becoming very strong. So, what is the design argument in biology? That the instincts of animals are so amazing. Two of his contemporaries have written a book called Nature's IQ. So where they describe the amazing mechanisms by which animals live. For example, bird migration. Now, there's a small bird in that book, frequently unanswered question, I talk about it. So this bird, its weight is so small that it cannot travel, like a plane has to refuel periodically. So this pelican bird, it travels so far away, the scientists are saying, with this weight, this bird cannot travel only. It cannot travel, but it travels thousands of miles. And they say this cannot travel and it's already traveling for centuries now.
So,
yeah, actually how it happens is that just before it starts traveling, it eats a lot and increases its weight. And that weight is there for nourishing it. And then this bird migration is so amazing. Scientists thought, how do, for example, say one bird leaves North America and comes to Europe, across the ocean. But this bird's life is only 3-4 months. So when Europe, it reproduces and it dies. And then when its progeny go back and return the same nest which was there in North America, which their parents or grandparents were living on. How do they know at all? What is passed out as genes? But then if you say that knowledge is passed down in genes, but then, it's not that the same nest is going to be there for hundreds of generations. Nests keep changing. But they know where to go. And first of all, they have never been to that nest before. How do they go there? So they thought maybe they have some magnetic compass, or they have some understanding of how the stars are there in the sky. But they found that actually they are able to go even when there are clouds in the sky. Then they thought maybe they are able to orient themselves with their magnetic forces. So, they tried to put magnets on the path of the birds to try to disrupt the magnetic forces, and nothing happened. The bird just went peacefully. So actually how it is happening? It is the super soul who is guiding. The super soul, for the lower species, he gives instincts. For the human species, he gives intelligence. Now what is the difference? You can say instinct is also a form of intelligence. But instinct is primarily for eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So animals are remarkably intelligent. But that intelligence is limited to eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Whereas human beings, he uses a higher intelligence. That intelligence is to go beyond eating, sleeping, mating, defending. I always had this question, why do you use the word Krupana? Krupana, what does it mean? Miser. Brother Aranyaka Upanishad talks about it. That yo agagya avidit prasmal yah prayati sakrupana. It's a long verse. So, what is the idea of a Krupana? A miser is somebody who has a lot of money, but he keeps it locked in the treasury. Locked in a box. And doesn't use it even for his own good. So like that, who is a Krupana from the Vedic point of view? One who takes his desires and locks them up within eating, sleeping, mating, defending. He doesn't desire anything else. So bhakti is not the process of giving up desires. Bhakti is the process of freeing our desires. We free our desires so that we can desire something more noble, something more glorious. Otherwise people are just locking their desires in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And how do we free our desires? For that Krishna gives the Vedic literature. So, that's why otherwise if you see, these two parts seem unconnected. First Krishna is saying, I am present in the heart of the super soul. I give knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. Second part suddenly saying, I am the compiler of the Vedas, I am the knower of the Vedas. What is the connection? No, the connection is that knowledge which will liberate us, that he uses internally as a super soul and externally uses as Vyasadeva. So he is saying three things. Vedaishcha sarvair ahameva vedyo vedantakrit vedavideva chaham. Three things he is saying. That I am the compiler of the Veda, I am the knower of the Veda, and I am the goal of the Veda. So, because the Vedic knowledge is so vast, that people can get bewildered. You know, is this the goal or that is the goal? Bahu Shastra, Bahu Vakya, Chitta Brahma hai, Sadhana Sadhya Srishti na hai nishchay. So, therefore Krishna is telling that, actually I am the compiler of the Vedas. And it's, sometimes, you know, we may write something and then we ourselves forget it. Krishna says, I have not forgotten it. I know it. And what is the ultimate purpose of all the Vedas? It is to know me. So, Krishna maintains us spiritually as a super soul and as the Vedic literature. So, first three verses talk about his material maintenance. The next verse talks about his spiritual maintenance. Now, verses 16 to 18 are called by Vishnuacharya Thakur as the three Shloki Bhagavad Gita. Now, we have a Chatur Shloki Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, 10.8 to 11. He calls it the Trishloki Bhagavad Gita. So why does he call that? Because the essential message of the Bhagavad Gita becomes very clear in these verses. So let's we'll decide 15.16 and then we will discuss it. Dvavimau purushau loke together.
Dvavimau purushau loke charaschakshara evacha charas sarvani bhutani bhutasto akshara uchyate.
There are two class of beings, the fallible and infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is infallible.
Yes. So, two living entities, fallible and infallible. That means those who are conditioned and those who are liberated. So, he is saying that those in the material world are fallible. Now, kutastha. Kutastha means what? Actually, kakutastha. That means, you know, kuta is like a shikhar. Shikhar is like a tower. So, kutastha is one who is situated in a tower. Just like if a bird situates himself on a tower, then he can look down and see what is happening without being affected. So, like that, the liberated soul is situated on top, above the material world, and he can see what is happening without being affected. So, kutastha. So, those are situated like that, detached from the material world. Obviously, they are akshara. They are infallible. They don't fall down. Shara means to fall down. So, then he's talking, now this is very nice, the impersonal, like the word kutastha, yes, liberated, kutastha. But then Krishna, what he does, it's like in sometimes, you want to, like what Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur did when he was debating, you know. First he started glorifying the Brahmanas only. No, he started reciting verses which even the Brahmanas didn't know. They're so amazed, oh, he's on our side. So you draw them closer, and when they come closer, boom, you give them a punch.
Who is the actual Brahmana? Brahmana is not by birth, Brahmana is by quality.
So like that Krishna is drawing the impersonal closer. Kutastha. But the next verse, what does he say?
Let's recite the verses.
Uttama purushastvanyaha paramatmeti udaruta yo lokatrayam avishya vibhartyavyaya ishvaraha.
Yes.
There is the greatest living personality, the supreme soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them.
Yes. So the impersonal idea is that once you become liberated, you become one with God. But Krishna is telling that Paramatma is beyond the liberated also. Uttama Purusha Tvanyaha Paramatma Udharuta. And what is he doing? He is just clarifying what I told you earlier. Yolokatre Mavishya. He is maintaining all the three worlds. Vibhartya Avyayishwara. He is imperishable. So, I see this is a very interesting strategy in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna many times refers to himself in the third person. So, third person means, yes. For example, in 18.62, Krishna says, Tameva Sharanam Gaccha Sarva Bhavena Bharata. Go and surrender to that super soul. Super soul. In that case, so Arjuna goes deep into thought. You know, that is a very beautiful section. Arjuna is thinking what to do. And then Krishna's heart overflows with cup. Hey, Arjuna, don't bother about it. I'll tell you the most confidential truth. And there is a Sarva Dharmat Parittaja Mam Ekam Sharanam. So, like that, in this verse, Krishna is saying, oh, that Uttama Purusha is beyond the Sharanakshara. But who is that Uttama Purusha?
Now, actually, if somebody is very careful to understand, they will understand. Vibharte avya Ishwara, who is the maintainer of the world? Krishna himself says, Aham Vaishvanara Bhutva. I say that very clearly. But in case people are dull-headed, Krishna makes clear in the next verse. So, he says in the next verse, yes, together.
Yasma charamati toham aksharadapi chottamaha atosthi loke vedecha pratita purushottamaha.
Yes.
Because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated in both the world and in the Vedas, and that supreme person.
Yes, Purushottama, supreme person. Tama is darkness, Uttama is beyond darkness. So, my impersonalists have the idea that Purusha, personality is within the darkness of Maya, that is personality. But Krishna is saying that the Purushottama is beyond the darkness of Maya. So, I am that supreme personality. So, why does Krishna use this strategy? First, he is saying that that super soul is there, he is the maintainer, then actually I am that super soul. There are several reasons. One reason is for a practical point of humility. Krishna doesn't want to always say that, surrender to me. No, you surrender to God. Like Prabhupada also did that, when the devotees wanted to make a big mansion for him, big sort of building for him in Mayapur. The devotees said, Prabhupada, we want to make a big building for you. Prabhupada said, no, not required. Then the devotees were disappointed. They wanted to offer it to Prabhupada. Then they went and told Prabhupada, we want to make a building for the spiritual master. Yes, please make it. So, why a devotee doesn't want glory for himself? It's not that, but the spiritual master is a representative of God. The spiritual master should be respected. So, Prabhupada doesn't want anything for himself. But as a spiritual master, he is accepting that on behalf of Krishna. So, like that, Krishna, like one Western scholar, he read the Bhagavad Gita and he said, Krishna is the most egotist conception of God that I have ever read. Why is he so insecure? Always telling, I am God. No, he's not insecure. It is natural position. He's enlightening us. But if you read carefully, so many places Krishna actually doesn't say that he is God. Although he can. He can say, I am God in every verse of the Gita. But he doesn't do that. Why? Because naturally he's humble. He's told that I am the super soul. But then he goes on and says that you surrender to the super soul. That is one understanding. It's the humility of Krishna. He doesn't want to emphasize I again and again. Now God does not delight in being God. He is God. But his delight is not in his godhood. His delight is in reciprocation of love. So, when Krishna is talking about himself in the administrative sense, then he uses the super soul. It's because, he is here talking about the super soul. So, super soul in one sense is different from him. In another sense is not different from him. Achintya Bheda Veda. But super soul is the maintainer of this world. Krishna is not the maintainer of this world. So, therefore he is saying that Paramatma who maintains all the worlds. But in case there is, to avoid confusion, Krishna does make things clear. And the same thing happens in 15.4 and 5. He says, in 15.4 he is saying that, you have to go beyond this world. And then you have to find out that supreme person. Tatah padam tat parimargita ubhyam yasmin gatana nivartanti bhuya. Tam eva chadyam purusham prapadde yataha pravrti prasuta purani. That you have to go beyond this world and surrender, find that supreme person from whom the world has come. And surrender to that supreme person and return to that supreme person. And then 15.6, that abode of mine is beyond light and heat, is not illuminated by fire, sun or moon. So he makes things clear if we are carefully reading. But still, Krishna maintains his humility. Because he does not delight in his administrative position as God. He delights in the reciprocation of love. So now why Chakravarti Pad calls this the Trishloki Bhagavad Gita? Because this very unambiguously establishes the difference between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. So, there is the similarity as well as the difference. So, if we understand our qualitative identity with God, that may free us from lust. Because if I understand that I am not the body, I am spirit like God, then that can free us from lust. Then why should I go about trying to enjoy other material forms? So understanding our qualitative identity with God can free us from lust. But it is only when we understand our quantitative subordination to God that it can free us from pride. Understanding our qualitative identity with God can free us from lust, but it cannot free us from pride. Aham Brahmasmi, I am that. That will not free us from pride. That will increase our pride. So that's why there is qualitative identity as well as quantitative subordination. We have to understand both. And bhakti involves understanding both. So when we understand, so this verse talks about the quantitative subordination. And in this way, it becomes very clear that we have to surrender to Krishna. So now in case still things are not clear, that I am the Supreme Person, then Krishna makes things even more clear in the next verse. Yo mameva asam mudho janati purushottama sa sarva ved bhajati maam sarva bhavena bharata. Is somebody behind? Who likes to read?
Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, the Son of Bharata.
Yes. Asam mudho. The mudha is a word which Krishna often uses. Vimudha nanu pashyanti. The foolish cannot see me. But he says, asam mudho. One who is not at all bewildered. See, completely freed from bewildered. Sam mudha means bewildered. Asam mudha means not bewildered. Yo mam eva asam mudho. So, unbewildered person understands me. As what? Janati purushottama. Sa sarvavit. He knows everything. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, first verse, Krishna talks about Vedavit. One who knows the Vedas. Krishna is earlier told that, who is the Vedavit? One who knows me, because I am the goal of the Vedas. Now, he is telling, one who knows me, not only knows the Vedas, he knows everything. So, Sarvavit. Bhajati Maam. And what is the ultimate fruit of knowing Krishna? Now, many Indians, many Hindus, they say, Krishna, we know all the time. We know Krishna. What is so great about Krishna? We know him. But, when Prabhupada brought his Western disciples to India, they found his Western devotees are so devoted to Krishna. They are wondering, what is so special about Krishna? Then they realize they didn't know Krishna only. Because, actually Krishna is not just like a laboratory specimen which you have to observe and study. Krishna is a person to be loved. And unless we love Krishna, we cannot really know Krishna. So for a devotee, knowledge has only one purpose. To increase his bhakti to Krishna. We are not interested in acquiring knowledge for knowledge's sake. We want knowledge so that we can increase our love for Krishna. And if we have knowledge, if we truly have knowledge of Krishna, we will have love for Krishna. So, that's why a devotee's knowledge about Krishna is permeated with his devotion for Krishna. And as Krishna says, if you understand that I am the source of everything, I am the Supreme Person, what will happen? Sarva bhavena bharata. Sarva bhava means with all your emotions you will invest in me. You will love me with your whole heart. So, Krishna in the 8th chapter also uses the same word, no? Aham sarvasya sarvam mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante ma buddha bhava samanvita. Bhava samanvita means with emotions. Krishna emphasizes the same thing over here. Sarva bhavena bharata. With all his heart such a person will love me. And then in the last verse Krishna makes things even more clear. He says that actually if you know this, that means you know all scripture and your life is successful. Iti guhyatamam shastram idamuktam mayanagha etad buddhva buddhiman syat krita krityascha bharata. Iti guhyatamam shastram. So in English you have this ascending tense, good, better, best. So guhya, guhyatara, guhyatama. Secret, more secret. This is guhyatama shastra. Most secret knowledge of all the scriptures. Iti guhyatam shastram idam uktam. I have spoken this to you. Why? Maya anagha. You are sinless, O Arjuna. So you know, even a sinful person can study Bhagavad Gita. But the understanding will not dawn. So to the extent, we try to give up sinful activities. You know, we follow the regular principles more and more strictly. The understanding of Bhagavad Gita will dawn in our hearts in such a way that we will become attracted to Krishna. Otherwise, we may get theoretical knowledge of Krishna, but we will not get attraction to Krishna. So Krishna says, I have revealed this to you because you are sinless. And etad buddhva, if you understand this, what will happen? Buddhimansya, you will become truly intelligent. And krita krityascha bharata, whatever you do, you will be successful. So in the background of the Bhagavad Gita, the battle is going to take place. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that if you have this knowledge in your foreground, then you will be successful in everything that you do. So here, Krishna reveals his heart, his sweetness, his beauty, his love, and he's inspiring Arjuna, surrender to me and just follow my instructions. So actually, in Kali Yuga, we are also fighting a battle. Actually, the battle is internal and external. Internally, we are fighting against all our anarthas, constantly attacking us.
Arthata, ambushing us from different directions. And externally, there are so many agents of adharma, of Kali, which are actually creating misconceptions. There is materialism, there is pseudo-religion, within what we call as Hinduism. There are so many fanatical forms of other religions which are converting people and creating so much disunity, so much disharmony. So now, in Orissa especially, because of Jagannath's mercy, the culture is so much there. But still at the same time, the Christian missionary activity is very high. If somebody wants to become a Christian for going towards God, that's wonderful. But what happens is most of the time the missionary propaganda is based on, because there is not much to talk about God in Christianity. But we have only one task time. Jesus came and he got crucified. There is no katha to talk about of Jesus. So you know, I'm not criticizing them. It's just objective truth. So you know, I had gone for one interfaith conference. So there, you know, this person, he was telling me, this young boy, he was 23 years old. He says, "I am Brother John. Next year I'll become Father John." So they have a seminary where they have 8 years study. Now I ask him, "What do you study 8 years?" They say, "You study Bible 1 year, we study Hinduism 7 years." Of course, they study Bible also in parallel. What do you study for so long? So their whole purpose of study is to find out faults and criticize the Hindu scriptures. So, you know, if they really want to take people towards God, speak about Jesus and take people towards God. But there's not so much to speak. So their way of preaching is to criticize the Vedic Dharma. And unfortunately, there's nobody to counter the criticism. So they have all sorts of sentimental things. They say, you know, you have so many gods and your God do immoral things and this and that. There's no understanding. So, you know, what is important, we can't blame anybody else. Actually, it is to be the custodians of Vedic culture, we are not preaching vigorously. If we preach, then our philosophy is so powerful that once the sun rises, you know, you don't have to dissipate darkness separately. The darkness will automatically go away. But if the sun is, so there are many Hindu people, they are saying, "Oh, Krishna is converting, our Hindu dharma is getting destroyed." Or they have this, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Paradharmo bhayavah." Paradharmo bhayavah is, other religion is very fearful. So, the VHP has a program to convert people from Christianity back to Hinduism. And their slogan is, "Paradharmo bhayavah." Other religion is very fearful. Now, that Paradharmo bhayavah is very different what Krishna is talking about. Krishna is talking about not Christianity and Hinduism and all those things. Krishna is talking about, you know, not doing activity according to one's nature. Doing something else. So for Arjuna, as a Kshatriya, to do another activity is not good. That's what he's talking about. Anyway, the point is, at a materialistic level, if people just take and say, "Hey, this is happening, that is happening, what to do?" No, that will not work. What is the great strength of the Vedic culture is philosophy. Philosophy and the culture. So if we just preach that, there was a very beautiful lecture of Prabhupada. Prabhupada, I had never heard such a lecture of Prabhupada. I'll conclude with this. He was giving in Mumbai, in Hindi. So he was telling that, he says, "I went to the West and I preached and main akela gaya tha aur ek ped ke niche baith gaya aur kirtan chalu kar diya aur ye sab log aa gaye to ye Bhagavad Gita ke gyan ke liye hai, bahut market hai." Bahut market hai. Aap sab ek Pakistan kho gaya ro rahe hai, par aap Bhagavad Gita prachar karenge to sara duniya Hindustan ban jayega. पर आप सब नहीं आ रहे तो आप सब हमको आशीर्वाद दीजिए कि हम प्रचार कर सकें.
So, just see the amazing humility of Srila Prabhupada. He is telling, "You bless me." These people are materialistic, but Prabhupada is the devotee somehow or other wants to attract people, whether it is by humility or by chastisement or whatever. So Prabhupada sometimes called all of you are rascals. Other time he may say, "You please bless me." So devotee somehow or other, yena kena prakarena mana Krishna nivache. Somehow or other, make people become inspired towards Krishna consciousness. So, yes, if we can spread Krishna consciousness, if we can just take it as our inspiration, the way all of you work so hard to conduct the camp, it was amazing. It's first time in the history of Raurkela that we had such a big camp, so many devotees. And not just the number, but the quality of the devotees is also very good. And you know, all of you have a wonderful opportunity to expand the preaching of, you know, Ramana voice and help more and more people to relish this nectar of the Bhagavad Gita and then share it with others.
So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Shri Krishna Bhagwan ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Ramana Voice Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Tai Gaur Premanandi. Thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagwan ki, Jai Prabhupada ki, Jai.